A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Looking for the best that European football has to offer? Well, you've come to the right place. Welcome to On the Continent. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David College.
On today's Goal Scorers Feast, Bayern and Poland without Lewandowski. What does his absence mean to his club's fortunes in the Champions League and in the Bundesliga? And where to next after Man City for Sergio Aguero? Bayern? Barcelona? Atletico? We'll come back to that. And under-21s in the international spotlight. So So, first of all, let's talk about the absence of Europe's on-form goal scorer for the last few seasons. You know, Lewandowski in your team, you're going to get goals, but he's not in your team at the moment if you're Bayern or if you're Poland. Andy, how big a blow, first of all, is the absence of Lewandowski to his team, to Bayern?
It's big, Dotton, and I think there are two sides to this. Firstly, I think losing Lewandowski at any point is huge for Bayern. One, because we know the amount of goals he scores for them. He scored, 41% of their goals in the Bundesliga this season. And he was on course to easily beat Gerd Müller's season record of 40. He's on 35 at the moment in the Bundesliga. Because we don't really know how Bayern play without him, because he so rarely misses games. He's just incredibly durable. He doesn't like to rest. You look at, say, Sandro Wagner, who turned up as, it looked like, the ideal locum for Lewandowski a couple of years ago. And he quickly got bored of it because he thought, well, where are the opportunities to play? You know, I'm maybe getting 5-10 minutes here and there, and that's it. I think the brochure was a lot more attractive than the day to day, and that's why. And I guess it happens quite a lot in modern football with elite strikers, particularly with a lot of teams playing with only one centre forward. It's like, you know, how does Spurs get back up for Harry Kane? You know, how do you sell a future of not really playing to a player who's good enough to step in and, you know, at least hit 75-80% of the level of that player? And the reason they've got to get used to playing with Lewandowski is not just about the goals, though. It's about everything else that he does. And that's what made him such a star at Dortmund in the first place. And why they made such an incredible botch of their succession plan for him. Because when Lewandowski went in 2014, Jurgen Klopp and Dortmund tried to replace him with not one striker, but two strikers in Adrian Ramos and Ciro Immobile. Neither of them really worked because they realised that you couldn't get one player to replace Lewandowski. Because if you've got someone who's your goal scorer, your hold-up man, who likes to fight defenders, and my goodness, he likes to fight defenders. He really relishes the physical part of the game. Someone who can make runs into space and open up space for his teammates. Someone who can even drop and make a pass, which has been required of him a little less at Bayern, admittedly. He performs enough functions for that team to mean it requires a mini evolution to replace him. It's not just a case of struggling to replace him with a player of the requisite quality, because clearly Bayern have a fantastic squad, and I still have them as title favourites, and I still have them as just about favourites to get through against Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League. And that's where we come to the second part of it. It's not just the injury, it's the chronology. The fact that Bayern are going to Leipzig on Saturday, who are 4 points behind them in the Bundesliga at the moment, and Leipzig couldn't have a better opportunity. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you could argue this puts a little bit too much pressure on them. And the other thing is that they've got this Champions League quarterfinal with PSG in a rerun of last season's final. Now, obviously, it's all over the German papers today that Lewandowski has been ruled out for a month. He's planning to come back in 2 weeks, which is him all over. He's targeting the second leg, it looks like, of the Champions League quarterfinal with Paris Saint-Germain. A lot depends on what happens in that first leg, I suppose. But, David, I think it's not just the reality of playing without him. It's a big psychological blow, isn't it? And it gives everyone else a lift.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Lewandowski is now recognised as one of the most prominent figures in the game. And I think if you are an opponent, firstly, coming up against that, you know that he isn't there, and there certainly isn't a player of his level to come in and replace him, then you are going to approach that game differently. You're not going to completely switch off, of course, but you do approach things in a different way. You're not as concerned. You have maybe a bit more confidence. You'll look at it as like, have we got more of a chance now in this game? We perhaps had a, you know, perhaps the game was 50-50 before. Maybe now, we've got a 70% chance, maybe more. And so I think they'll look at it like that. As for Bayern as well, it's a double-edged sword here. You know, they will feel the repercussions of not having him there, and not only for the actual senses that you pointed out in terms of his movement and what he offers the team outside of goals, but also, again, he's one of their main figures. If you look across that team, in terms of senior figures, there aren't too many there. A Lahm type figure isn't there, for instance, for them. So, you know, somebody like Neuer from being a goalkeeper is going to have to be the most senior figure there, perhaps. So Lewandowski is definitely going to be a big, big miss in that sense. And who comes in to replace him, you know, again, is a difficult one, because I think you hit the nail on the head saying there's going to have to be a mini evolve there. Whatever happens, they're going to have to change a few things, and it's going to be interesting to see how Flick handles that. He's obviously under, I'd say, a degree of pressure already. There's lots of talk, you know, that he might leave in the summer and such. And I think it'll be a big, big test of his capabilities as to how he navigates this.
Yeah, I wonder, when you look at these two things, in case anybody doesn't know, Lewandowski got injured playing against Andorra. And clearly, he was missed by the Polish team when they took on England last night. But I wonder, when you look at it from the Bayern perspective, which one of those two important fixtures, or which one of those, two important tournaments over the next few weeks you will miss Lewandowski in the most? Can they weather the storm better in the Champions League, in the first instance against Paris Saint-Germain, or can they weather the storm, the absence of a storm of Lewandowski not being there, better in the Bundesliga, if you know what I mean, Andy? Which do you think?
I think Bundesliga. I think you're right. I think... It's worked quite well from a building tension perspective for various marketers of the Bundesliga, I think, because that Leipzig Bayern game has pride of place on Saturday. It's the big game at 6:30 local time on Saturday. The fact that it's at Leipzig and the fact that they're going out there with Lewandowski, it does sort of breathe a bit of excitement into the title race that perhaps hasn't been there. You know, we felt Leipzig just about clinging on, but, you know, do we really believe that Leipzig are going to overtake them? I think it does take a little bit of a jump to think that that will happen. I think if Leipzig were going to get something from this, then we'd start to feel a little differently, because, of course, they don't have any Champions League commitments anymore, and Bayern do, at least for this quarterfinal, and they will hope going on a little bit more as well. But it does put a peculiar sort of pressure on Leipzig, doesn't it? Because it's like, right now, this is your chance. You have to take it. So do they have to be a little bit more daring than they really would want to be against Bayern, because they feel it's a Lewandowski-less Bayern and this is their chance to close a gap? And not just this is their chance to close the gap, Dotton, but the next couple of weeks are their chance to close the gap and really make a title race of it. I do think, though, that in a weird sort of way, not that Bayern will be looking to anyone else for tips, but that Bayern can look at Leipzig and say, actually, that's how we work it, because of course everything attacking wise goes through Lewandowski for Bayern. But the fact is, Leipzig lost a 30 goal striker in the summer in Timo Werner, and they've not had a direct replacement. Okay, they got on in Alexander Sorloth, who is by no means a like for like, and has struggled a little bit particularly in the first half of the season before motoring a little bit in recent weeks. But Julian Nagelsmann said at the start of the season, didn't he, you know, we've got to share the goals around. We're not going to get someone who's going to score as many goals as him. And Bayern are kind of in the same boat, that Flick will be saying, right, I need everyone to chip in. And they've got enough players who can do that. They've got Goretzka, they've got Zane, they've got Coman, they've got Gnabry, who we know can drop into that more central position. So I'm sure they will have rationalised it already.
Surely, David, they would have rationalised that in the Champions League as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I'm glad Andy brought up Gnabry, because for me, he is the one that I think they could use and not feel the loss of Lewandowski as much. I think he's somebody who could be used like that. He's done it before for Germany, if I'm correct, that he's played that more advanced role. He's certainly shown he's capable of it. And I think he's somebody, especially if we talking from a tactical point of view here in terms of his positioning and his movement, the actions that he makes, that he could potentially bring something to the table to make up for that loss of Lewandowski.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? You look at Gnabry's record for Germany in terms of goal scoring, it's almost Lewandowski-esque. He's going on at almost a goal a game for the senior team. It's really, really impressive. So I agree, David. I think he can step in and do that. I think as well, if you look at Bayern as an overall prospect, they're in a much better nick now, and going on to what you wanted to talk about, Dotton, in terms of the Champions League, they're in much better nick now than they were when they started off the knockout stage against Lazio, where they couldn't even fill up the bench. And Musiala, who, you know, I think deserves to get his chance because he's been excellent, of course, making his Germany debut in this international window. Musiala ends up in there because they're short of players. And, you know, now they've got Pavard back. Now they've got Goretzka back. And Goretzka back makes an enormous difference to them. I think that's pretty clear. He's been brilliant for them over the last year and probably their best non-Lewandowski player in that period. I think Bayern look a far more difficult prospect for their competitors. And I do include Paris Saint-Germain in this, coming into this doubleheader, than they did when they were really struggling. Because as we've said time and time again on the show as well, when players come back from Corona, you can't tell what sort of nick they're going to be in. Someone like Joao Felix, for example, David, it's taken him a while to get back to. I think that's something that's been largely overlooked about him. Like, people have just expected him to plug and play and been able to get on with it, which I think is unrealistic. We know the varying effects it has on different people. Leon Goretzka, on the other hand, is a machine and has played exactly like people expect footballers to play when they come back from COVID, as if they've just had 2 weeks off, as if they've been on the beach, you know, which I think we're all a bit guilty of feeling about footballers sometimes. But I think going forward into that, I wonder if the biggest injury absence in this Champions League quarterfinal, I know he's out for the game at the weekend, is Marco Verratti. Because he's not playing against Lille this weekend. We'll see if he can make it for the Champions League game. But, you know, it's away from our Lewandowski Bayern point. But, you know, I still think they'll feel okay about this game, this doubleheader with PSG.
Just out of interest, David, how much difference do you think Lewandowski, a fit Lewandowski, would have made to the England-Poland game?
Oh, considerable. Yeah, he would have been a difference maker. I think, you know, you can drop somebody at that level in, with all respect, an average team, and he really, really elevates the level of them. So he would have made a big difference, I think.
So what's the betting now, Andy? What's the betting in terms of Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich? Nevertheless, clearly PSG have got the kind of chance that you talk of Leipzig having, an opportunity rather than chance, of turning over the champions of the Champions League at the moment. What is the betting on that? How do you see that match panning out?
Well, Dotton, like I was saying before, I do feel it's perception versus reality, because the talk in France of Lewandowski being out has been huge. Everyone's been talking about it, as if this is the door being opened for Paris Saint-Germain, which is a very dangerous way of looking at it. You know, the rest of the team is absolutely fantastic. The rest of the squad is absolutely fantastic. It's a blow for them, there's no doubt about it. But they've still got the tools to beat Paris Saint-Germain.
Dante va pouvoir glisser ce ballon avec Götze. Arturo Vidal, ça c'est super dans la course. Et malgré l'intervention de Dante, Robert Lewandowski est présent pour venir permettre au Bayern Munich d'égaliser un partout.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, I'm Clive Anderson, and My Seven Wonders is my podcast where I sit down with some fascinating guests and ask them one simple question. If you could pick your own seven wonders of the world, what would they be? The guests' choices lead us to some interesting tales, whether it's Omar Jalili being stopped by New York Customs.
They brought me in for the interview. They said, so what are you doing there? I'm doing a show with Whoopi Goldberg. And the guy said, no, I'm doing a show with Whoopi Goldberg, as if you are. And I said, excuse me? I am. That's why I'm going there. He's doing a show with Whoopi Goldberg. I couldn't believe my ears.
Olivia Lee eating £120 apples at Soho House.
I mean, it is hideously expensive. If I'm just going there once and taking an apple, it's the most expensive apple you'll ever eat.
Or David Baddiel talking about his dad's dementia.
The other thing he could remember are his regular insults. So still, when you leave my dad, if you say, I'm off, he will say, you've been off for years. And it's really comforting that he can still abuse you in this way.
Forget the Taj Mahal and the Lighthouse of Alexandria. The wonders of the world we talk about are much more unique. Listen to My Seven Wonders now on your favourite podcast app.
My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson is a Stakhanov production.
This week it's been a tale of two great strikers in the news, and gives me real pleasure actually when you see Lewandowski on the one hand being talked about as being so important even for the support of the Champions League, because a Champions League without Lewandowski is poorer. It's poorer. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
But imagine a Man City without Sergio Aguero. That's been the big news from over this side. After 10 years at the club, his contract's not going to be renewed. All sort of friendly, no acrimony about it, but nevertheless, it almost seems as if you've taken a chunk out of the Premier League with Sergio Aguero leaving it because he was such a stalwart. So, and the conversation now is, David, on where he goes to next. There have been all sorts of suggestions. Paris Saint-Germain seems to be an obvious one for as the default European team for any top players who are looking to move. But there's a lot of Spanish interest with regards to Sergio Aguero, isn't there?
Yeah, there certainly is. I think, you know, you look at it, especially Barcelona have been consistently linked with him throughout the years. Real Madrid had their time, they've been linked with him quite often. You know, when he was at Atleti, of course, to disrupt their noisy neighbours. So I think there's definitely two options there. Barcelona's probably the one I'm leaning more towards in terms of where I do think he would end up out of the Spanish giants. And then, of course, there's an Atleti return, which you do have to address as well, because he did play there. It's where he rose to prominence. 97 goals he scored there, 70 of which were in the league. At the time of leaving, he was the 10th on the all-time scorers list. He was such a phenomenal talent. There was, of course, that magical game in 2008 against Barcelona when I think it was the night that everybody learned who Sergio Aguero was. His reputation in Spain is impeccably high. I think he could end up in Spain, to be honest with you.
It's an interesting thought, isn't it, David? His relationship with not just Atletico, but the city of Madrid. I mean, Atletico have changed so much since he's been gone, and he's changed so much since he's been gone as well. Because really, they were a bit crap when he was there. And of course, he won the Europa League with them in 2010. But they were nothing like what they're like now. A team that challenges, a team that's a Champions League perennial. I mean, on one hand, it's a beautiful ending to the story. On the other hand, I do wonder, especially with the muscle injuries he's had, do they feel we've been bitten a little bit bringing back former glories with big contracts? I mean, I'm not saying he would be the next Diego Costa, but it's got to make you think about that, right?
Oh, 100%. I don't think, you know, you've got to look at their financial situation as well. And yeah, even though Aguero's going towards the end of his career, he's still going to command a decent wage. And yes, he isn't a free transfer, but there's lots of fee. I always say there's no such thing as a free transfer these days when you look at signing on bonuses and wages and such. So, and then you look at the injury situation, and I don't think Atleti would risk it. And I think there would probably also be an argument from a certain section of their fan base that we don't want him back, because there was an interview he once did. It was put out there that he would never, ever sign for Real Madrid. And he actually came out and denied that. He was like, I never said that. And that went down really, really badly with a big core of Atleti fans.
Actually, what David touches on there might have something to do with where Sergio Aguero ends up, Andy, because it's not just in that respect that Sergio Aguero has to walk on eggshells with regards to the Atleti fans, is it?
No, and I think it's interesting because when he originally went to Manchester City, because Manchester City, again, weren't the Manchester City then that they are now, it was pre them being Premier League title winners, there was quite a strong whiff of conspiracy in Spain that because he couldn't politically and aesthetically, as David was saying, make the move straight from Atletico to Real Madrid, there was quite a strong like core of belief that he was just at Manchester City as a bridge to get to Real Madrid. Not quite, you know, Robert Yarny ended up at Coventry before he went to Real Madrid like 2 months later, but that sort of ballpark, you know. I think that's what makes his achievements really at Manchester City all the more remarkable, because no one expected him to be there for a decade. But when we talk about where he might go next, I do wonder about Italy, actually, because, you know, that is a place where the 30-something striker get stuck in. I mean, I know we're thinking at the moment of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, of course, who's extraordinary and not representative of any movement or any trend. But, you know, then we go backwards to Luca Toni, Di Natale, players who actually improved after their 30th birthday. Now, I'm not saying the Milan lab is what it once was in terms of being ahead medically and physiologically of every other department out there in European football, because I don't believe that's the case. But there is quite a convincing body of evidence to suggest that he could maybe get out there and, you know, have a few more very, very good years in Europe, if that's indeed what he wants.
Yeah, no, I think Italy's a, you know, Juve absolutely love a free transfer. So they'll just look at it just because of that. I think Barcelona interests me because you're talking about convincing bodies. And I think the body of Lionel Messi is extremely convincing. Just going to that new board and saying, hey, look, they messed up letting Suarez go. Why don't we get Aguero in and just fill that little striker hole, get those 20, 25 goals. I think that's an option that you have to look at.
Yeah, one more thing that we have to look at in this conversation. Obviously, if Aguero were to go to Barcelona, there are other players in the pecking order for Barcelona. And Antoine Griezmann comes to mind immediately. Arguably hasn't performed to the level that was expected of him when he went there, Andy. What would happen to him in that scenario of Aguero coming there? And also, please do tell people what I was hoping you'd say earlier on when I threw to you about the Atletico fans is the greeting that Thibaut Courtois got when he showed up with Real Madrid, just to give us an insight into what Sergio Aguero might get if he chooses the wrong club in Spain.
Well, one of the wonderful features of the new stadium, the Wanda Metropolitano, which is not part of Atleti's old barrio, so it's maybe not got quite the same spirit, despite their efforts, the club to bring that in. One of the things they did to Atletico-ize it, I suppose, is put this kind of Hollywood-style walk of fame outside the stadium with a little, I guess, tile for every player who made 100 appearances for the club. And so obviously you've got some really loved and cherished players there, and Thibaut Courtois is one of those. Now, the first time they played Real Madrid, all the Atleti fans just dropped all their trash on it, and that completely covered that up. And that was something at the time. So I'm not quite sure where Sergio Aguero would have to end up. Well, I do know where he'd have to end up for that to happen. I think that they're another club in Madrid who've had more than their share of old strikers. But while we're talking about former Atletico legends, the Griezmann chat is very interesting, I agree, Dotton, because whether or not Aguero were to come, there's got to be a question mark over his future. And you see him go away this week for France and be so productive. Of course, a couple of big goals for them, that brilliant goal against Ukraine, and then the winner in Bosnia, in which was a really uninspiring France performance, and he helped them out of a hole. And just the level of consistency of Griezmann at international level is extraordinary. You know, this week he also, as well as passing Trezeguet for the third in France's all-time scoring list, he passed Patrick Vieira for the most consecutive games played for France without a break. So Vieira was 44. Griezmann is now on 46 after that game against Bosnia. And it's particularly extraordinary when you think how much he puts in. Now, I know a lot of people will look at him and think, oh, well, it's Diego Simeone Stockholm syndrome. But you ask people who are with him Real Sociedad, and they will say Griezmann was always like that. He always ran like a dog. He always put so much in. And that's what attracted Simeone to him in the first place. I always feel, David, that that's a little bit undervalued at Barcelona. And also, and I hate to bring an NBA analogy into this. I don't hate to bring an NBA analogy into this. But if the Joao Felix thing didn't quite work out, would there be some sort of three-team trade sort of thing where Griezmann ended up back at Atletico? Would that be the worst thing in the world for them or for him?
Atleti do love to run it back. So I think they definitely assess it, and it, nor would it be the worst move for them. But ultimately, I think Atleti need to stop doing these kind of sentimental deals, and they probably need to look elsewhere. I'd actually say that, I'm going to throw this one at you. I think that if they do replace João Félix, they should actually look to the man who eventually replaced Griezmann at Real Sociedad, Oyarzabal.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, just a really exciting winger at Real Sociedad who's grown into a more creative attacking midfield role. Despite being extremely young himself, he's a leader there. He's got an excellent attitude. It's the sort of attitude I think Simeone would really love. You know, no social media, no tattoos, that sort of thing. You know, just very much grit and grind. So I think they'd love him. Getting back to Griezmann. I think time will actually be really, really kind on him. I think once he retires, once he goes on, I think people will look back at the sort of role that he performed. If they look at his transition from an every quick, skillful winger at Real Sociedad to Atleti, this incredible workhorse who, you know, molded his role from a winger into an attacking midfielder, but almost a defensive attacking midfielder. I think, unfortunately, this Barcelona move hasn't worked out. I don't think they knew what they were properly buying in terms of how he would be used. And that's sadly gone against his legacy. Fortunately, he can go away with France, as we've discussed, and he still stands out, and he's such a key component in that team.
How is France using him, though, that Barcelona isn't using him?
I think the difference is, Dotton, is that France is always the centre of everything. And Didier Deschamps' big choice, really, in, say, Euro 2016, is where he stopped, and I've talked about this before, where he stopped trying to make Pogba the central piece of the team and moved on to making Griezmann the central piece of the team. And that's what Olivier Giroud owes his France career to. You know, he's there to be the foil for Griezmann, so he can be that second striker or that nine and a half or however you want to put it. But, you know, he's never going to be the main guy at Barcelona. And, you know, I think it's easy to look at him and think he's someone who plays so selflessly, maybe he can do without being the main guy. I don't think the two things are contradictory. I think you can have a need to be the main man and still work feverishly for the team, and that's where Griezmann is, I think.
Se va perfilando, descarga para el otro lado, le queda Jordi Alba, tira el centro, la termina Messi, Griezmann, gol! Gol! Del Barça, al minuto 40.
Let's shine the spotlight now on Europe's under-21 group stage of the Euros. Disappointment from England, but all the other teams in Europe seem to have the best young players around. I don't know where we should start on this one. Should we start with Spain and Portugal? David, they've got a lot of players coming through. That is worrying over the next few years. For anybody else who's in competition with them, that is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you look at the players that are coming through at under 21 level, I'd say that Spain, Portugal and France have probably got the biggest group of players that you could say, oh, well, they could be in the full national team side. You know, they really, really stand out to that sense. And they've all made the knockout stages that begin in May. In terms of the future and present, it looks really, really good for those nations.
Obviously, we should look at the star players in these under 21 groups, Andy. But I wonder, just on a broader level, whether it is the players that are making the difference, or it's the way that the play is conducted. You know, the coach is making a difference. Because we've got a golden generation as well, but we don't seem to be shining like the countries that David mentioned there, France, Spain and Portugal.
Well, I think a lot else has been said about Adi Boothroyd elsewhere in the Ramble Network. And yes, I am looking at you, Luke Moore. I think there's clear issues with the way England have been run. And I think the fact that they have, as I said elsewhere, someone who's a manager rather than a coach in charge, I think is a big issue for England. And they need to figure out how they're going to move on from there. But I think as well, we mustn't underrate the talent of some of these other nations, as David pointed out before. Now, I think as well, there's always a few that take you aback a little. For me, it was the Netherlands who were particularly impressive when they thrashed Hungary 6-1. And you think there, not only is there quality, there's real experience. A lot of players who've played very, very good level of football for quite a long time. And I know there's Myron Bayadu, for example, who David pointed out as one of his ones to watch in his excellent ESPN column with Tor Christian Carlsen before the game. And maybe we'll get into a few more of those players in a minute. But, you know, you look at Kurt Manners, who I think could do a good knitting things together midfield job for a lot of teams in the top flight of European football. Gakpo's played a lot of good quality football for PSV Eindhoven as well. And then, you know, you look at Italy, and you look at players like Scamacca, who I think has been absolutely brilliant for Genoa this season. I think he can step up a level. You look at Patrick Cutrone, who's played in a couple of different countries already, which I think makes an enormous difference. Or is he onto his third different country? And I think that broadens your football education. So to see what's out there as well, it's good to get out of the bubble. And I think whether you follow the Premier League or just La Liga or whatever, I think it's easy to get that sort of locked in sense of, oh yeah, the young talent here is amazing. I mean, that is one of the best bits about the Euro under 21, that it shows you what else is out there, and you see where everyone else is coming from.
In respect of that, David, what's the talent that you've seen? Who are the bright stars of under 21 football that we should keep an eye on for the future?
There's one player, Andy's going to be very, very happy that I've brought him up. And I think Wolves fans will be as well. But I thought Vitinha was sensational for Portugal. I think he's such a mature, intelligent player. Mm. He's a young player, but my word, he plays like somebody who's 28, 29, who's got Champions League performances under his belt, titles under his belt. He's a very smart player. I love, you know, a bit of a number eight, likes to drop in between the centre-backs, get the ball off them, initiate player. He's excellent physical qualities, excellent technical qualities. And I think he's going to be somebody you'll see at Wolves in the next maybe 2 to 3 years, pretty much looking to run that midfield.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Portugal have had so much quality to watch. I mean, winning all three of their group games, of course. But for me, I'm all in on the Francisco Conceição hype train. And it was good to see him get the third goal against Switzerland. You know, he's bearing a big name from his dad, but I think he's ready to deal with it. And to be in there at 18 years old and already with the guts to express yourself in those sort of games, I think is very, very impressive indeed. But I think you look elsewhere as well. Pedro Gonçalves, or Pote as he's otherwise known, he's had a good group stage. He's been one of the best players, if not the best player, in the Liga in Portugal this season with Sporting. He's been a huge part of their title push. And the way that he lands himself in the box, I think there's something a bit David Platt about it, actually, with more technical ability than maybe people give him credit for as well. So I think that's that's something to look forward to as well. You need to see the pathway. I mean, that's the issue when we're going back to people talking about England earlier in the week. You need to see that pathway. And Boothroyd's talked quite a lot about creating that pathway. It's more difficult to see than he explains, I think. Whereas I think you look at Portugal as an example, or maybe France as an example. Maybe the pathway is slightly obscured by the fact there's so much competition with France, even though there's some real quality in that. And I think at times you can look at this tournament and think it is a bit of a France-Portugal arms race, really, particularly when you look at the first teams at the moment. But I think you look at young players with flair in Portugal, for example, and I think in the past, especially after Euro 2016, people would have said, it's built in the image of Fernando Santos. How is he going to bring through young players? Well, he's done that for the first team already. You know, you look at those players like Bernardo Silva, João Félix, who have been allowed to express themselves, allowed to come in. Pedro Neto, who came on for João Félix and changed the game, actually. In that game against Luxembourg when they were really under the cosh the other night and that they were losing, and he made a huge difference, the Wolves player. I think now you can see how those promising Portugal under-21s can find a way to get into the first team. And that, above and beyond the results, is what it's all about.
Yes, it's funny you mentioned that pathway, because if you speak to anyone who's involved with Spain during their golden era when they finally started winning tournaments, they always cite the pathway and the channel from under-17s through to the under-19s, through to the under-21s, and then through to the top team. There was always that pathway there, be it a synergy between the coaches in terms of what they profess in training, over style, over training ground drills. And it was always so, so important that every time a player made the step from the under-19s to the 21s. Under-21s, yes, the quality level was much higher, but it was made easier to transition because you were playing the same sort of style. And that's so, so helpful for a player. It's pointless you being in the under-19s with a very all-out attacking coach playing 4-3-3, then going into another setup where you are defensive, you're expected to play a different type of role, maybe a counter-attacking role, or you soak up a lot of pressure in games. It's very, very difficult to understand. There was always a role carved out. When Thiago Alcantara was in the Spain under-21 setup, you could already see the role that he had in the future national team. And that's always so, so important, I think, for these young players especially.
Yeah, one young player that's gone under our radar, certainly my radar in any case, is Brian Brobby. David, he plays in the Dutch leagues and plays for the Netherlands as well. What can you tell us about him?
Yes, he's at Ajax at the moment in the Netherlands, but he has agreed a transfer to RB Leipzig. So they've always been impressive when it comes to snaring young talent. I think it's a really, really good move for him. The style that Leipzig play really, really suits him. He's such a blistering, energetic, powerful force in attack. It's fantastic to watch him play, because he's got incredible instincts in and around the penalty area. He's got that natural poacher look about him. He can back in, he can bully defenders, but he's also just got a little bit of street smarts about him in terms of when and where to make the right moves. And I think he looks like somebody who could be a real, real force when it comes to attackers in the future.
Sounds like the kind of player that the Dutch used to produce on a regular, as a young player, there's so many names in the past, but now you're talking about him as if he is idiosyncratic for the Netherlands.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he suits the way that they're going, and Andy brought up a few names as well. You look at Mordu as well, just another one who looks fantastic. And I think when you look at that Dutch team, and they're producing a lot of really, really exciting attacking players, whether it be wingers, whether it be strikers or creative types.
So which of these talents that we've talked about will we be talking about, let's say, in a year or two's time, as talents that have shaken up their respective leagues and the game in general in Europe? Andy?
I'm going to have to go French, aren't I? And it's not going to be the captain. It's not going to be Matteo Guendouzi. We mentioned him on the ramble earlier in the week, actually. Ibrahima Konate, who I think is going to be a big star when he leaves Leipzig. A lot of people who've watched Leipzig for a while, including me, would say he's maybe even a better out-and-out defender than Dayot Upamecano. So for me, Konate will go a very long way. How many French caps that will get him is a different question because, again, the strength in depth they have at centre-back is unreal.
And David, I suppose you're going to have to go Spain or Portugal.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with my Portuguese man. I've still been that impressed by him, but Vitinha. So yeah, I think Wolves have just got a fabulous player there that they can get really, really excited about right now.
So it's at the point where we ask you both to suggest a great game that we can all watch this weekend, a game of the week. Andy, you've got one, and perhaps unsurprisingly.
I can't work out, Dotton, why it's not Sunday night at 8 o'clock. But it's not Sunday night at 8 o'clock. It's Saturday afternoon at 4. It's Paris Saint-Germain versus Lille, obviously because of Champions League commitments. So giving PSG a little bit of extra rest, I do jest. And it's huge because Paris Saint-Germain, I think the feeling is, as we spoke at, on last week's OTC amongst some people, is that them putting Lyon in their place was them taking control of the title race and saying, right, well, we're not going to have any more of this going forward, having not got very many points off the other top teams so far this season. But I think it goes back to that, the fact that they haven't taken a lot of points off the other top teams so far this season. And Lille are very much one of those. They've led the table for a lot of the season. They've had a few little splutters at home recently, so I think they'll be happy to go to the Parc des Princes rather than have it at Stade Pierre-Mauroy. And there are a few issues for PSG. Firstly, the fact that Marco Verratti, who's been their main creative force under Pochettino, is not going to play. We'll see if he makes it back to the Champions League game against Bayern. And the fact, the positioning of this, the fact that this is directly before the Bayern game, which is obviously the hugest in Paris Saint-Germain's season, it's not enviable timing, really. I think they're going to struggle to have both eyes on this game. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it turns out to be the absolutely perfect tune-up for them to take them to the next level. But I believe in this Lille team. I think Christophe Galtier is a great coach who's done a brilliant job there. They've had a few little stutters in 2021, but I think for all the way you can pull apart what Lille might have done, this international week has taught us one thing. Burak Yilmaz is still absolutely brilliant at 35. And if he'd not been out injured for quite a lot of 2021 so far, they would still be on top of the table. I think it's that simple. So Burak has got himself back into nick, playing for the national team. We were talking about the under-21s before. Jonathan Ikone, who's been carrying a little injury, has got himself back into nick, playing for the France under-21s. I think there's everything here to suggest that it could be a very competitive game, and from the perspective of Lyon and Monaco, they'll be wanting to take advantage of these teams taking points off each other.
Absolutely mouth-watering, although I thought you'd go for the Bayern-Leipzig game. I thought that was the obvious one.
It was close. There's also a Dortmund-Eintracht Frankfurt on Saturday afternoon, which is going to give us a huge steer on Dortmund's Champions League future.
I actually think you've chosen the most mouth-watering one out of those options. But, David, you've got some suggestion for us as well in terms of game of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. Sunday, 8 p.m, we've got Sevilla versus Atletico Madrid. Always a game that's presented fireworks down the years. I think that, you know, this, if you look at this game coming into it, both teams, you know, being bounced out the Champions League recently. They've got the league to focus on. Atleti, you know, have had that big lead at the top of the Liga for some time. It's now dwindled down, so a lot of pressure on them. I think Sevilla are going to look at things and say, can we add more pressure and also potentially try and secure a higher place in the league? I think this one's going to be really, really interesting. There's not going to be many goals in it, I don't think. And it's going to be very tight. It's going to be a very, very tactical affair between, I think, two coaches who are going to be a little bit cagey at first, feel each other out in Lopetegui and Simeone. But I think we will see a winner at the end of this one. And I think Sevilla might be able to you know, put another spanner in La Liga's title race again by beating that lady.
It would be great to be watching the same match as Sergio Aguero is watching.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.